This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 27. Tom knelt in the dust, his right hand still clutching his precious stone, together with the left, pressing his temples in an effort to stop his head exploding. Every fact remembered came with a tortuous sizzle and pop as though its courier had just been zapped by an insecticutor in his skull. Protecting his sanity, something inside the boy tried to shut the horrors out. Undeterred, the Tom struggling to know drifted upright and sleptwalked towards the pool. One after the other, his feet stepped over the lip, plunging ankle deep into the freezing water. His dream seemed to catch his actions then, merging with them to form a powerful mix of senses that placed him back in time as though he was there. And he was there. In the real world, he sat in a green, slimed and rotten seat. But behind closed eyes, that same object had the clean lines of an electric chair. He looked at the girl seated to his right, her grim face returning the look with a smile and a bite of her bottom lip. But in the present world, the real world, as Tom rested the back of his neck on the rusty cradle, he was alone. Tess, a memory as clear as any moment lived in the present. Feet sodden in the crystal Highland spring, the straps at the wrists, his waist and ankles, seemed to fasten themselves. His head pushed back into its place of pain and he waited for the buzzing. He waited for the buzzing to grow and roil and swarm throughout his body. He looked for Silas then. Silas. 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 George Silas. The man. The tormentor. And there he was. Sitting in front of them, Tom and Tess. And then he heard her, his mother.
Tom! Tess!
Silas smiled.
It's up to you, boy. Her pain is yours to take away.
Tom remembered the crackle of jagged light leap from the rod, the stench of burning flesh, his mother's limp body in Silas's arms. He was using her to get them to do what he wanted.
Look at your sister. Feel her strength. Use it.
But Tom could not block the screams from his head, could not resist the urge to struggle against the straps binding him ever tighter to the seat of terror. And then the circle of hands, Tessie's love flowing from his right and the cold brutality of Silas crushing him from the left. Once more the buzzing nodes bombed him with sounds, pictures, facts. Again the bright ball of light streaked across the unknown sky, two naked and pink babies, a hideous creature, Silas, scooping the children in his arms and carrying them over hill and stream to a wild and beautiful place he recognises, Cregan. But in this Cregan there was no cottage, no ruin. And suddenly it was there, built in the blink between two memories, a grim stone edifice that kept the weather out and the cold in. The babies turned to toddlers then, and the toddlers were Tom and Tess, and now there was a woman, their mother. Laughing and singing, the cottage grew warm. Home. This period, the children alone with their mother, seemed to stretch for years. And Tom caught a glimpse of a life without Silas. Happy, loving, carefree. And then he returned. The boat, the supplies, the pain. A billion facts nipped at his head and ripped through his body like a frenzied infestation. They buzzed through his fingers, and he saw into Silas's thoughts mingling with his own and Tess's. He saw a huge castle, high on black rock, somber children praying, their dark faces a curious mix of contentment and dread. And then there were thousands of voices, millions of thoughts, billions of facts ravaging his mind. The cradle at his neck seemed to hiss with the searing heat on his flesh. Somewhere his mother cried out,
"Tom! Tom!"
Tessie's grip slackened on his. The equations, the obscure names, the references to strangers and places unknown slowed from a torrent to a trickle and then to a stop. Tom opened his eyes, knowing this time that what he experienced was not a present reality but a memory as vivid as the experience itself. But still he heard his name. It bounced on the walls, his mother crying out in fear and anguish. Now he knew where to look. Jumping from the seat, he splashed through the pool and ran into the main chamber, turning immediately to his left. Another arch led into a cave so small that he had to bend down to enter it. And there she was, his mother, looking at him, her rescuer, her son. She tried to smile through silent tears tumbling her cheeks. She opened her arms and Tom fell on her, his emotions treasured pain he wanted to suffer, a mixture of happiness that he was with her at last and fear and anger for how she'd been treated. He wrapped his arms around her and crumpled to a pile of misery when he felt nothing but empty, cold air, and the cruel realization that his mind was still determined to trick him whenever it could. Tom lay in abject isolation. The image had caught up with reason, and now all he saw was a chain fastened to a wall, a single empty manacle lying rusted on the floor. As he lay there, tears flowing freely, he heard his mother call again, but this time he did not move. It was another trick. She was not there. The dust had gathered undisturbed for years, the place no more than a mausoleum for his ghoulish memories. The most he could hope for was to use the cavern as a painful forum in which to rebuild his notion of self, who he was. But once more the light surrounding him changed. It dimmed as his name drifted in a glob of light as bright as the sun. It hissed and popped as it neared.
"Tom! Tom!"
And soon he could see little beyond the sun until Catriona moved the lamp from in front to her side, and they stood in complete darkness again, wrapped in a small bubble of white light. Chapter 28.
"Oh my God!"
Catriona swung the lamp slowly from side to side. It was obvious from her wide-eyed expression and hesitant movements that she was frightened, but still she stood her ground. She had, after all, braved the entry to the cave on her own, and now her fear was as much for Tom's safety and sanity as for her own. Tom could not see what she could. The boy had been lying in total darkness. He jumped to his feet as she approached and now stood blinking rapidly as he stared in turns at the lamp and then the girl. His face, his clothes, his matted hair were coloured cremation grey. His shoes and lower legs were sopping, blobs of congealed dust clumping the fabric in the stone floor he stood on. But it was his face that shocked Catriona. Even in the super white light of the gas lamp, despite the ashen makeup trying to fake the look, beneath the macabre illusion of a stage setting, the girl could see that Tom's real skin was the colour of death.
"There's no one here," whispered Tom,
as if that explained everything, made it safe. She stretched a hand, her eyes glancing at the rusty chain hanging from the wall. Tom took the proffered hand. He felt her flinch as they connected and saw her face twist as she resisted the urge to pull back. But when nothing happened, no ghoulish pictures invaded her head, she gripped him tightly and pulled him to her and away from the open cell. They walked through the large cavern, past the strange bookcase, the pile of empty books he'd thrown on the floor. He had an urge to look again, but Catriona's pace did not slow and he was too weak, too emotionally battered to resist. That changed when he saw a single, loose-bound volume lying on the ground beneath the table. Something lurched inside Tom. He recognized the object as surely as he'd recognized the heartstone. It, too, had belonged to his mother. He wrenched himself from Catriona's grasp and stood to pick it up. Catriona was about to snap at him when she saw his fevered hands fumble the object with reverential fear.
"I know this,"
he whispered, and then commanded,
"The lamp!"
Catriona looked towards the exit tunnel and then at the blackness of the cave beyond the reach of the bubble of light. She shivered but was infected by Tom's sudden excitement. She placed the lamp on the table and drew herself to the boy's side as he lay the book flat on the dusty top.
"My mother. It was hers."
Catriona stiffened.
"Your mother? How?"
But her words trailed away. Their shared vision of the family gathering during the seance was still strong. So too were the feelings of love and devotion between the woman and Tom. And this was her diary. Catriona suspected that Tom's need for a family made him overreact to the vision she had conjured. But there was no doubting he had found the cave exactly where he'd looked for it. And now the diary. Could it be hers? The sense of evil in the cave was difficult to fight, but if something was going to attack them, then surely it would have done so already. Tom caressed the cover. Given his earlier experience with the bookcase, he feared the pages would be as blank as those in that strange collection. But when he flicked through the bundle in his hands, he saw immediately that he was wrong.
"It's the same paper,"
Catriona whispered. Both Tom and the girl pictured the woman scribbling happily on the beach before her world turned to pain. To call the bundle a book was a stretch. Rough paper scratched over with black ink, kept together by a loose leather cover, crackled in his hands and threw dust into the air. Catriona sneezed. The paper was so dry that Tom worried the thing might disintegrate with each tiny movement. He lay the pile flat on the table and turned the front cover with two hands as though he was a librarian entrusted with a first edition Bible. The heart beneath his fingers touched his mother's words for the first time in years, and he gasped at the sight of her neat and artful writing. Centred, and still bold despite years of neglect, she had written, "The Private Journal of Kathleen Henderson, 1852 to..." The final date was incomplete and Tom ignored the obvious implication. In his world, nothing was obvious. Some of the entries were unreadable, but whole passages survived intact, the writing a flourish of swirls and loops waltzing through her life. The first complete sentences were close to the beginning.
"Another good night. Please, God, let her live."
And two pages on, "Her cough's back. Blood and phlegm. She looks so frail." It was another 10 pages before he read the following. "A part of me feels guilty for wanting Mother back, for missing her so. God has taken her pain away. Father James says I should rejoice. I must be a selfish woman because I can't see beyond the loss of her." Various partial entries talked about the funeral and it was obvious to Tom and Catriona that the woman was alone in the world. She had looked after her mother for so long that she had no life of her own. There was a long period when little was written before the journal took another turn. "Father James has a job for me. I know little of the case, but he urges me to leave for Arran immediately. It's so far away." And soon, another entry. "The bailiff has given me 2 days to leave the house. Mother was a master at hiding her debt. I had no idea." And further on again. Mr. Silas called. Poor man is wretched. He was disfigured badly trying to rescue his wife from a fire. He's left with two babies. I must help. Tom stiffened, drew a gasp of fetid and dusty air. He knew exactly who those babies were, and he was devastated on so many levels that his head began to spin. He tightened his grip on the stone and willed the soft embrace of his mother to enfold him, to protect him from this new and vile truth. But the embrace did not appear, and the truth closed and crushed and crumpled the carefully constructed world that centred in the love of his mother. And the truth was that she wasn't. She wasn't his mother, but a lost soul lured to a poor man whose need was greater than hers. A poor unfortunate, crippled and heroic, George Silas. DreamWorks.com.